Welcome to the Confidence in the Cloud reboot, can we call it that?
I think so, for executives.
For executives. If you are new to this, we have a Microsoft Virtual Academy module that goes into, that we did, I think it was, what, not quite a year ago?
I think it's about a year.
About a year ago, and we'll put the URL at the bottom here. So you can go and check it out. It's a bit more in details as to what we're going to do today. Today is more of a update.
That's right.
It's the one-year level plane update.
That's right. And after the four-part series that we recorded last time, we got the question asked of us if we could do something for senior executives or mm-hmm. senior leadership within organizations. And so we're responding to that request and creating this brief video.
And we've had a major event since.
That's right. We've announced our plans to bring data centers into Canada.
So today we're going to talk about the confidence in the cloud. What does it mean for CXOs and executives in enterprises? We deal with mostly large enterprises, but that this applies as well to small and medium businesses in terms of what they need to think about and how they can be more confident with their cloud environment.
Exactly. And it's based upon our conversations that we've had over the last year as we've been encouraging organizations to seize the opportunity that the cloud presents.
But speaking of seizing opportunities, I know that in the industry out there, there are a number of companies and businesses that are either looking at it or have dipped their toe in it, and so I know that's there's a report out there, survey kind of things, that tells us that about 30 to 37% of large enterprises and medium businesses are still in the evaluating, like they haven't actually plunged in, they haven't actually started even with the pilot. They're still just thinking about it and wondering why.
Yeah, it's an interesting question of why organizations haven't gone to the cloud as rapidly as other nations or other mm-hmm. companies and other organizations, other nations have. You know, part of that, I think, is just because they're a little bit slow to adopt new technologies in Canada. We've found that for every dollar that a company invests in technology in the U.S., Canadian companies invest 58 cents. And so there's perhaps a little less risk tolerance in Canada in moving to the cloud.
And we know for a fact that a lot of our, like a healthcare government, they've been waiting for our data centers to come up because they've been telling us that data
residency
was an issue in some cases. Some was perceived issue, some were actually real issues, but we've dealt with that on our last recording. That's having our data centers in Canada should speed up things, hopefully, for those who are concerned about that.
That's right. What we found from the C-level executives is that when you're trying to move forward with a project, often they'll reach out to the risk management teams, and the risk management teams will look at the policies and legislation. And as they're reviewing the policy and legislation, data residency often came up mm-hmm. and said, where is our data? Is our data indeed within the country? And by putting the data centers in Canada, now that question doesn't have to be raised anymore because you simply say, checkbox, data's in Canada, let's carry on and move to the cloud.
So what are the other things that the CIOs, CXOs are thinking about or not thinking about? Like, what is their roadblock?
Well, I think the main thing that's a challenge is, you know, we as technology people use cloud as a short form, right? It covers a broad category of different online services. But when we went out and surveyed C-level executives across Canada, we found that only 1 in 10 C-suite executives could define cloud. And that to us was troubling because cloud does provide very promising opportunities for business to transform the way that they do their business. Now, it's not because the C-suite is unfamiliar or is can't be educated. It's just that they look at cloud services in the name of the brands, right? Yep. So OneDrive for business, Skype for business, Outlook.com, is those types of services. So when we prompted them with cloud services as software as a service, then they quickly said, yes, I get that. But as you can appreciate, where people aren't really clear about what something is, they're not really eager to adopt it and jump in.
True. And through my conversations with IT pros, and IT pros get it, but more of like the small business managers, and they'll say, well, no, I'm a little concerned about the cloud. I don't think I'm going to go to the cloud. I want to have like their server huggers type of deal.
Oh, no.
But then when you start asking questions, such as, well, what email do you use? Oh, I've got a small Office 365 subscription. Well, that's cloud services.
Right.
And how do you get your payroll? Well, I've got this QuickBook Online. Well, that's a cloud service.
Right.
And then when they start opening their minds to cloud service, it's not necessarily this big thing. It's just, it's a service that scales for you when you need it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I think, important when we start talking to the C-suite. We start to look at some of those characteristics of the cloud, like NIST has provided. So in the U.S., the National Institute of Standards and Technology has provided a definition for cloud services, but really talks about the characteristics. And you mentioned one just right there, the ability to scale out, the ability to make use of what you require when you require it.
I always say, because people want to have a short definition.
Sure.
My short definition of cloud services, and that basically qualifies for any cloud services, is elastic capacity.
Right.
So it's always on, and it grows and shrinks as you need it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I think, a great way to characterize it. Some people have characterized cloud computing as easy to use as electricity. And use electricity as a metaphor for senior leaders. Mm-hmm. You plug it in, use what you need, when you need it. It's always available. You're not really worried about where it comes from. You just get that. It's reliable. You have the name brand behind it. So those things help the business understand a little bit better how you're taking computing to the next level.
So what are the reasons why C-suites are? So we know why they're not.
Sure.
So what are the reasons why they are moving to the cloud?
That's a great question. And, you know, cloud computing allows organizations to really focus on their ideas. I work with a lot of startups. And in the past, startups would receive their funding for their IT idea. And often that funding would go to hardware and to software. And then they'd have to wait for that hardware and software to come in before they got their idea running. Now, by using the cloud, they can focus on their idea and not have to worry about provisioning hardware and software. Now, you say to me, it's like, well, that's a startup. It's a greenfield opportunity.
It is, but the startups have started, excuse the pun, a kind of like an IT revolution as well to why they've introduced kind of like the DevOps role to the masses, where because they're small and don't have typically a operations group and a development group where they have somebody that does dual hats.
Right.
And that led into infrastructure as code, which is what drives Azure infrastructure, IaaS.
Right.
So
right.
Startups are a greenfield, as you say. They understand that when they get their funding, to put it where it actually counts for the business and not just building hardware.
That's right. And even large businesses are doing the same thing. They're saying, look, we have a new project. We want to reach out to new customers. They are using the cloud to be able to do that.
Yeah. And that makes them more agile. So they can turn on a dime because they don't have to worry about this massive investment that they've got sleeping in their data center.
Exactly. And it allows them to put something up very quickly. Think of a pop-up store type idea for IT services. So it's a pop-up, try it out. If it works, then we'll continue it on. If not, then we'll drop it back.
Fail and fail fast.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Now, one of the things that often comes up in the conversations around cloud is security as well. And believe it or not, often moving to the cloud increases the assurance, increases the security that organizations have within their IT services.
The misconceptions that people have, or some people have about the cloud, is their concerns about security.
That's right. That's perhaps one of the largest concerns that organizations have is around security. And sometimes I think that's because there's a little bit of definition required around different types of cloud services. Mm-hmm. You know, we mentioned some of the brand names earlier, and we talked about Outlook.com. We talked about the OneDrive for Business. There's two types of services really that are out there. One is consumer-based services, And think of an Xbox service where you're online with your gamer tags and you're gaining as an individual. And then there's the enterprise service where you're treated as a corporation or a company.
Yep.
Different agreements, different ways the data is handled. And it's important that when you talk to the C-suite, to those senior executives, that they recognize that you want a relationship with a cloud provider that's enterprise ready, that treats you with the assurance, with the service levels, with the contract documents to be able to appreciate that.
Yeah. And this agility and that security actually brings the last one, the last point, which is a higher value.
Higher value and focus on the value to the organization.
So what are the scale, like how much are we getting in terms of adoption out there?
You know, there's over 80,000 customers in Canada that are on the Microsoft Cloud. And we've got 85% of the Fortune 500 companies using the Microsoft Cloud.
Yeah.
And so they are embracing these technologies, embracing the new way of doing business. This is more than simply a technology play. This is a revitalization or transformation of business to be able to grow your business at scale.
And the scale, it's just mind-blowing. Like I always, every time I see the stat, 4 trillion objects in storage.
It's 1 million CPUs that are under management. You know, sometimes I like to joke when I started off in this game and managed my server, you know, that was one server and I could do everything on that server. To operate the cloud at scale, you simply don't take your performance and your activities at the one server and multiply by a million. It just doesn't work that way. And so to be able to have that reliability on a global basis requires some really interesting new approaches to be able to deliver the service.
Speaking of new approaches, like, what can people do different, or what would be the analogy here? Or,
well, you know, there's a popular internet meme around boiling the frog. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
The meme goes like this.
You put the frog in the water and you bring up the temperature slowly, the frog will boil.
That's right. It doesn't change its behavior. So the outside is changing. The frog doesn't realize it, and it boils to death and eventually dies. And so
we don't want that for our businesses.
We don't want that for our businesses in Canada.
Please don't die.
And so sometimes we see that, hey, there were some tough economic times around the world in the previous few years. And we sat back in Canada and some businesses sat back in Canada and said, hey, it's not impacting us. We don't have to change how we're doing our operations.
Yeah, we sat pretty well. We went through it fairly unscathed.
That's right.
At the time.
But now we see that, hey, with the oil prices decreasing, commodity prices down, that there's a lot of belt tightening happening across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to help organizations then understand now's not the time to sit pat within our ever-increasing temperature of water. Now's the time to move, and the cloud can help us through these tough times.
Yeah, so jump out of the pan.
Jump out of the pan and focus on what are those priorities that our C-level executives have. And so we've talked a lot about the technology, but now let's talk a little bit about those priorities for the business.
Yeah. Well, priorities for the business is either to provide a service at a decent cost for, let's say, public service, which is not to make a profit.
Sure.
Or the other end of that spectrum is make a profit.
Exactly.
So two ways to make a profit is increase your prices or decrease your costs.
That's right. And cloud helps you decrease those costs and move some of those commodities out.
Yep.
And so it's really interesting when we've talked to C-level executives in Canada, there's really three main themes that they're focused on.
Okay.
And one of them is just engaging customers, you know, improving the customer experience across public sector and private sector.
Yeah, so if your customers come up and there's a consistent request for specific services, to be able to turn around and deliver those quickly.
That's exactly it. And you travel as much as I do across the country meeting interesting people. And we know how social media engages customers and how there's that no wrong door approach to access.
I know. And companies that are connected to that will do well, or actually do in generally better for their customers, or they're rated better for their customer service.
Exactly. And so C-suite is really, really engaged in trying to improve that customer experience, and cloud can help them get there.
I was in a lounge, and I'm not going to say the name of the airline's lounge I was in, and one day, and it must have been really busy, but the cups everywhere, it was actually quite disgusting.
Oh, no.
So I just got online and tweeted and put their hashtag on there, and it was remarkable. I sat down with my cup of coffee, and within 5 minutes, four people came out of the back room and started cleaning everything.
Wow, that's the power of social.
Social.
Excellent, excellent. So, and that's then beyond just the lounge. It's in the retail sector. It's even in manufacturing to connect business to business.
Yeah.
The second place where organizations are really focused is on becoming a digital business.
Okay.
We hear a lot about the digital economy. I like to channel a little bit of Neelie Kroes, who's the vice president of the digital agenda in the European Union. And she says, no, our economy has become digital. And so how do you embrace digital technologies in all aspects of your business? And the cloud can help you do that through connecting of Internet of Things or more social, big data, allowing your business to have better insight than ever before. And the last piece, and you've mentioned it throughout this conversation, is being more responsive. You know, being able to respond to customer demands, customer queries, or even market impacts.
And if you don't have to worry about managing the infrastructure and your complete attention and resources are based on the product, not what it's running on, then you have the resources to actually address those things and address them quickly.
Exactly. And you can have a great innovation. Think of a hack space or a startup type environment to be able to bring new innovations to market.
Mm-hmm. So all of that, but does it bring out some perceptions?
It does.
And there's the same report that was mentioning earlier did say that 60 to 63% of enterprises, small and large, are concerned about mainly two things.
Okay.
Security and physical control of their data.
Right.
So how do we address that?
Well, I think on the security side, we have a great deal of information that we share and help our customers appreciate how security is baked into the product set. I think on the physical side, a little bit more interesting. When we have conversations around physical security, a lot of people like to almost hug their server. So
yep.
Wake up in the morning,
server huggers.
Server a big hug.
Blinky lights and whatnot.
But if we look a little bit more closely at that server over time, we've realized that things have been virtualized for a long time. We can't point to a specific disk where the data is stored.
No.
We can't point to a specific location in memory where the data is stored at any one particular time.
I think it's kind of like the same... we're at the same inflection point in time that we were 10 years ago, but with a different type of technology.
That's right.
10 years ago, virtualization came into play. And I remember talking to IT managers and directors at the time, and it was like, no, I'm never going to virtualize my environment. It's running just fine the way it is. And nowadays, you're hard-pressed to find any enterprises that don't have all of their workloads virtualized.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the ways that I've positioned it to senior-level officials, executives, is around a bank. For the longest time, you know, people like to stuff the bills in their mattress and safeguard it there. But then they start to realize that, you know what, the banks really know how best to manage money, how to protect it, how to safeguard it, and do so on a broad basis more than just in one home. So,
yeah, but if we take that safeguard a little further.
Right.
And if we look at cloud and security and safeguards, like we know that typically attacks or companies that will get compromised, at some point there needs to be a connection to the hardware, or somebody has to have physical access to the network to introduce the compromised system.
Sure.
So does cloud help with that?
Well, I think cloud does indeed help with that. When we talk to organizations about their security, there's a lot of misperceptions out there. So I think it's important when we start to look at security that we scratch the surface, double click, so to speak,
yep.
And determine, you know, what's really happening out there in cyberspace and the malicious code. Like, it seems that we hear about almost every other week there's another exploit out there.
Yep. And credit cards, social security being as social security numbers being compromised, that leads to identity theft and like all kinds of personally identifiable information that gets exposed by, I wouldn't say mismanagement, but by somebody that's neglected some part of their environment.
Exactly. And when we do that double click and look behind the scenes, we recognize and see that none of these were a result of the cloud. So there's all these bad things happening, but people are wrongly attributing that to cloud services. Mm-hmm. And really, they're operated by internal services.
Yes. Is it a fact that like phishing expeditions or compromised system typically start with a person or a system that's exposed?
That's exactly how that happens, right? So education awareness still is a high priority within organizations. And then even just doing the basics, putting in place the basic foundation for security. Sometimes organizations cut corners with that.
Yeah. So that kind of leads us to what are the cloud, the security principles or the trusted cloud principles that we live by?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because when you're looking at all the different cloud providers, you know, there's got so much selection, so much choice. How do you choose your trusted cloud provider?
Yep.
And these principles help people make that choice. I think the first thing is that people should rely upon is Microsoft's philosophy around cloud. And for enterprise cloud, our philosophy is that customers are always in control of their data.
Yes. It's not our data. We don't want to do anything with it.
Correct.
We're just going to store it and let you access it.
That's right. And so that is, I think, the most important aspect of this is that customers are always in control of the data. They never hand over control, even partially, to us as a cloud provider. Mm-hmm. And when you read through the Microsoft Trust Center, which provides you a one-stop shop for all the information you require about compliance, about security and privacy,
yep,
you will actually get tired of us saying that it's your data and you're in control of the data. Following yep. that philosophy, though, we have four principles that we abide by for our cloud services: security, privacy, compliance, and transparency. Those four principles help then establish that trust and confidence. And when you're talking with organizations, you know, I think you found that, you know, these are things that they're asking us about.
Absolutely. Like, they want to know, is it compliant to my industry? Like, I do credit card transactions.
Right.
Am I compliant with PCI regulation? Am I compliant with, if it's in healthcare, Health Canada regulations on how I store my data?
Exactly.
And all these things.
That's right. So let's dive into each one of these things a little bit more detail. I think the first piece that's critically important is investing in security. Right? We take a defense in depth approach to protecting the information that mm-hmm. Our customers entrust to us. And this was reinforced by Satya Nadella last month in New York City, where he reinforced our trustworthy computing commitment, mm-hmm. The security, the privacy, and continuing on that journey. It's now baked into our DNA almost for everybody at Microsoft. And we take this from a defense in depth approach. So it's now gone much beyond simply the secure development, deployment, design, and communications. And we look at concentric circles of security. So from the physical layer, through the network, through the data, through the application. So we provide security throughout those different layers. And mm-hmm. there's some pretty interesting tidbits or examples that we can share. For example, we weigh our operations staff when they come and go to the data center. And so as they come through the personnel trap, it's a revolving door that is secured, they're weighed going in and weighed going out so that they can't leave with a piece of equipment.
Yeah, I got stuck in one of those dead man trap ones.
Did you have a big lunch?
No, I forgot that when I went in, I had a backpack.
Okay.
When I came out, my backpack was still in the data center. So when I went through the dead man and I stood on the pressure pad, my weight differential was greater than what was expected, and the doors were locked until security came to check me out.
Well, and that's just a great proof point of the length that we go through. Biometric controls, two-factor authentication in order to get into these environments.
Yep.
We actually track the paths of our technicians. If you need to go from one to five to fix an item, and you show up at door 7, your badge is deactivated and you must go to a security post in order to get that badge reactivated.
Because you've deviated from standard procedure.
Exactly. So we take security very, very seriously, and we are able to bake it in at scale. Now, another great example is around our administration of the services. Remember I talked about that single server way back when in the caveman
yep.
days, where the administrator had access to everything?
Absolutely.
And so that still comes up in conversations around people having this perception around administrators having access to absolutely everything within the data center.
Because there's a fear when the data is not in your own data center that you may not trust the person that's running that data center.
That's exactly the fear that's there. And, you know, we've seen recent breaches around casual data browsing, for mm-hmm. example. And you can't do that in the Microsoft cloud. When you look at how administration's done in the Microsoft cloud, administration is done in a very purposeful manner. Most operations do not require administrator access.
Yeah, and when administrator access is required, it's built on the zero access principle.
That's right. At any one time, there are no standing administrators on any of our servers.
Yeah. So if you need to fix one thing, and it's supposed to be for, it's estimated to take 4 hours to fix the thing, then you get the rights for that thing for 4 hours, and then it expires.
Exactly. Exactly. So you need to have multiple factor authentication to get into that system. We have something called the lockbox system, where it's a two-key process, where a trouble ticket comes out, a Microsoft engineer needs access to a particular resource. A manager then must approve that access. And as you mentioned, it's time-bound, it's heavily audited, and it's only for that particular access.
Yep.
So you can't have somebody sitting there and casually data browsing.
Yeah, so you couldn't compromise one person in the data center, and they wouldn't be able to do anything anyway.
That's right.
So now we've talked about security, like securing the hardware, securing the administrators, securing the environment. But what about the data itself? Like, what about, like, because the data is sitting in our data center.
Right.
So what about privacy?
Well, you know, here in Canada, privacy is a top of mind issue, right? And there is a recognition that privacy is far more than just security.
No. Right?
So when we look at the CSA model code or even the Personal Information Protection Electronic Documents Act, there are 10 principles around notice, consent, choice, limiting access, retention, redress, safeguards is just one part of that. And so we take privacy very, very seriously at Microsoft. It is part of our trustworthy development process. It has been for over 10 years now. And so we do look at how we protect information from a privacy perspective. We limit access. We limit the collection of the data. Mm-hmm. The retention periods are all readily establishable. One of the things that we're particularly proud of is that we were the first company to be certified against the new international standard called ISO 27018.
Yep.
It's a privacy for cloud standard, and it helps provide customers that confidence that they are always in control of their data, that it's not used for third-party usage, that your data is deleted in a timely manner after you've deleted it. And you know, sometimes we have questions around deletion of data after customers have deleted it.
Yep.
You know, the reason that we have
Does it stay in the recycle box?
Exactly, exactly. And so we need to keep it around just in case they accidentally deleted it and need to get it back. But we then make sure that it's available for that period and then delete it afterwards.
Yeah, so it's deleted, then tombstones, then cleaned and flushed.
Exactly. We make sure that the drives, they're all BitLocker protected, so they're encrypted on the drives. If the drive fails, that drive is obliterated within the data centers. So it doesn't leave the data center, so it maintains that.
It actually gets destroyed.
It gets destroyed. So we
Like a drive shredder type deal.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh. So we protect the information with a high degree of focus on privacy. Remember, our worldwide cloud services are developed and deployed informed by local policy. And so when we looked at Canadian privacy legislation, both in the federal and the provincial governments, we found that the 27018 standard meets or exceeds the Canadian privacy legislation.
Okay.
And so when you're talking with senior execs, you can say, yes, it meets our privacy requirements.
Well, that's the nice thing about when you're compliant with the kind of umbrella type of regulations and certifications. If you make yourself compliant to the most strict ones in the world, then you're obviously compliant for the ones that are not quite as strict.
That's right. And for compliance, we take that very seriously around grabbing and looking around the world at the leading compliance requirements.
Okay.
And so you may have heard of ISO 27001, the IT security management, the SSE 16, SOC 1, SOC 2 for outsourced or data center operations.
FedRAMP and all
FedRAMP
those.
And FISMA and HIPAA, all those different compliance requirements. What we do is we take all the controls and the safeguards that are listed within them, and we've created a master control list. And so for Office 365, there are over 900 different controls that we track in that service. 900 of them that we make sure that we comply against so that we can meet those compliance requirements of our customers.
Regardless where they are.
Regardless of where they are. And they can then streamline and move their compliance work further by simply looking to their service provider of having completed those requirements. In addition, we share the ISO 27001 and the SSE 16 audit reports with our customers as well, so that they can leverage that and use that for their compliance reports.
And if you people watching right now are a little confused with the alphabet soup that we've just put out there, the Microsoft Trust Center online has all of those documented very, very well.
That's right. And we've tried to make it easy for everybody to find that documentation, so it's a one-stop shop to find security, privacy, compliance, and transparency, all you need to know and all you could care to know on those services.
Yep. So we talked about that compliance and everything. The next one is transparency. Transparent are we?
We're very transparent. And when it comes down to trust, you know, we can have documentation, we can show the safeguards and controls, but it comes down to that relationship that you've established with your service provider.
Yep.
And you want to know how your service provider is responding to either the malicious threats that are out there. Perhaps it's around government requests for information. You know, just having a good sense of, hey, my service provider is taking care of me.
Yep.
They are concerned about the success of my business.
Well, as individual, we tend to follow those same guidelines. We trust somebody that tells us, like my mechanic, for example, and he calls me and he says, yeah, your car's not going to be ready. I've run into problems here and here and here, not with your car, but with other things, so I'm not able to meet the agreement that we had to give you a car back at the end of the day. I trust that more than the guy who goes silent and at 5 o'clock says, no, it's not ready.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Being transparent does go a long way.
And as business transforms their approach to using IT, they're entrusting Microsoft Cloud for more of their mission critical applications. And
Absolutely.
So that transparency is key. We've recently relaunched our Transparency Center. It's now called a Transparency Hub.
Okay.
Where we share information around, hey, what type of government requests for data do we get? How many of those requests for data do we get? What do we do when we get a request for enterprise data? You know, and I think that's a really important thing. A lot of our customers ask us, you know, if law enforcement comes to your office and asks you for data.
And I get that question every week.
Exactly. And what do you do? And so we commit to informing customers and redirecting that request to the customer.
Yep. Because it's not our data.
It's not our data. We're not in control of that data.
Yep.
Now, there are some situations where the law enforcement will ask us not to tell the customer. Those are typically criminal investigations where it's a small business. Think of that individual sole proprietor that might be running something a little bit shady. Alerting that customer that there is an investigation about their business will tip off the investigation.
Yeah.
So in those cases, we really fight not to alert the customer, but of course you can appreciate that it jeopardizes that investigation.
But none of those requests come without like a valid court orders and follow every laws and everything. It's not just like they don't have like a backdoor into the system to check the, because that's also a myth.
That's right. Absolutely not. There's no back doors. There's no collusion. There's no surreptitious access. You know, we treated that speculation the same as we treat speculation around malicious actors.
Yep.
And we really upped our game when that speculation came out. We added additional encryption. We fought the U.S. government in court for more transparency. So we take that very, very seriously and work with our customers to make sure that they are confident that their information is safeguarded.
But not only that, as part of our best practice, we always tell customers, encrypt your data. Azure will not do the encryption at rest. So if you put something in there that's unencrypted, then it stays unencrypted. But if you encrypted before you put it up, through Store Simple Appliance, through SQL encryption, through BitLocker, like regardless of the technology you're using to encrypt the data, if you're encrypting it and putting it into Azure and you're keeping the keys, then we can't even get to that data without talking to you. And it's a great way to say to law enforcement, yeah, well, you gotta talk to them because they have the key.
That's exactly right. So we provide a fantastic baseline security across all our services, right? So there's great security services within Azure. We talked about BitLocker disk encryption, encrypting to and from the data centers, between data centers.
Between servers within the data centers.
Exactly. So there's a great deal of protection there, but customers can also add on encryption. They can add on additional safeguards and controls. When we look at our software as a service in Office 365, being able to use your phone to authenticate individuals. Right?
Yes, so two-factor authentication, and everybody's got a phone.
Exactly. So you can build on and do a belt and suspenders approach to security.
Yeah, my long in the days where you needed to get like expensive fob type of systems that would give you a key code that would change every 15 seconds, and you'd have to have that in hand. Those were expensive, harder to manage. Now everybody has a phone, whether it's a flip phone or a smartphone. It'll do both. It'll either call you on the phone or send you a message that you have to authenticate to.
Exactly, and when you make security easy to use, people use security.
Well, yeah, because that's what leads to shadow IT.
Exactly.
If your environment is so controlled and so hard to work within, then your users are going to figure out a way to go around it.
That's exactly it. People are really, really ingenious at finding new and unique ways to avoid
the rules.
The rules.
So we've got our security, we've got our transparency, but how do we manage all of it, like in terms of like attacks? Because I get that question a lot. Do we do anything in terms of denial of service mitigation? Do we do anything in terms of intrusion detection? Like, do we have something that our folks listening here can they know that somebody's watching?
Yeah. So we have the great fortune of having over 1 billion people using Windows.
Yep.
We have a search engine that indexes trillions of pages. We have email services online that scan emails for viruses in the billions. And so we get a lot of intelligence around what's happening out in cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is we've recently created the Cyber Defense Operations Center, which brings together all that information.
Yep.
And shares that out to our customers and helps build it into our tool sets and products as well.
Yeah, so that's what the malware removal tool.
Exactly.
That basically gets updated every month.
That's right.
Or several times a month, depending on what's going on in the wild.
That's right, because the bad guys and gals, they continue to innovate and try to find new ways into systems. So how do we best protect against that? Is by sharing information, by collecting, by analyzing and sharing that information to make those products and suites better. And so we've recently announced the creation of the Cyber Defense Operations Center mm-hmm. to collate all that information and then to be able to share that out to people so that they can act upon it and be responsive and be able to act appropriately.
Acting appropriately, that's I think that's the key for any IT environments, even for personal environments. Don't reply to the email that like says Microsoft wants to take control of your machine. We are not going to do that.
You know, curiosity does kill the cat sometimes.
And every once in a while.
If you receive that email that says you've won the lottery and it has this funny looking attachment on it, just put it right in the delete bucket.
Yeah. So we've announced our data center in Canada. So what are those going to cover? Because I get that question a lot, but I want you to cover that.
Like, sure.
Is it the complete breadth of the Microsoft cloud offering, or is it going to be piecemeal? How's that going to work?
You know, the Microsoft data centers in Canada are two data centers,
yep.
One in Toronto, one in Quebec City, connected with the Microsoft.
Or in the fiber. Toronto region and the Quebec City region?
Yes, the regions, but they are in those cities.
Because I get asked, so what's the address? Where exactly are you putting those data centers?
Yes, we're not allowed to say the address of that simply for operational security.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure that these services are resilient as possible. These data centers will provide data residency for mm-hmm. customer content data in Office 365, our Dynamics CRM Online, as well as Azure. So we are providing those services out of the Canadian data centers and provide our customers the choice of keeping that data resident in Canada available at all times.
Yep.
So sometimes people ask around, well, what's the hot standby or cold standby approach? These services are always available. So hot standby and cold standby, those are terms that we don't talk about within our data centers. We have continuous service delivery, assurance, and resilience.
Yes.
So always available.
So, okay, so we've talked about security, compliance, transparency, misconception. So what's the next step?
Well, I think the next step is, how do you get comfortable in the cloud? What have other organizations done in order to deploy these fantastic services?
Yep. And try them out.
Try
number
them
one.
Out. Try them out is one of the things. You know,
dev test environments with phony data. Then you don't have to worry about it, but you can get a feel for it.
Exactly. And these are free trials.
Yeah.
So there's nothing preventing you from trying it out and seeing, you know, what type of legal discovery tools that are there,
mm-hmm.
the administrative controls, the audit controls, and ensure yourself that, hey, this is everything that you expect it to be and more.
Yeah, and And for a lot of the environments out there, a lot of our customers, if you have an MSDN subscription, for example, it comes with Azure benefits. So you get $100 worth of Azure time per month.
Fantastic.
So you can go and try it and use it as your development environment.
That's right.
So that's what it's for. Just look at what you have, assess your performance, jump into the pool.
That's exactly it. Jump into the pool with some sort of trial. Be very specific about what service you're looking at as well. You know, I mentioned earlier that cloud encompasses over 200 different services in the Microsoft world.
Well, we've released over 500 different services/features/capabilities in the last 12 months.
Hasn't the pace just been incredible?
You're telling me about it because I'm supposed to keep up with it.
That's right. I've seen you go up to stage on your cell phone trying to keep up with the latest blog posts so that you're as current as can be.
Yes, and I have had to pull a blog post the morning of because something the night before had changed.
Wow, it's just an incredible environment. But be very specific about that service that you're making use of, because when you go to your broad company team, a multidisciplinary team, you need to be specific. You can't simply say we're going to the cloud. You need to be very, very focused on what type of data you're talking about, what type of service, so that you can look at that compliance environment.
Absolutely.
Understand the rules. If you're dealing with credit cards, PCI. If you're dealing with health information, the health legislation that deals with that.
Or any type of personally identifiable information.
Exactly. And so what we've seen organizations that have moved to the cloud do successfully was work across the business. So bring in compliance.
Yep.
Bring in IT, bring in the line of business, the financial officer, sometimes even the chief executives to talk about what's the compliance environment, what is the risk tolerance, what is the categorization of the data.
Yep, and talk to your lawyers because depending on which environment or which vertical you're in, you may have different compliance regulations that apply to you.
It's exactly right. But it's a great opportunity to bring together the organization in this transformative type approach to delivering IT services.
Yeah, it's definitely a turning point into how services and activities are being developed.
You're exactly right. And I know that you've had far different conversations over the last 18 months with businesses than you had 3 years ago, have you not?
Oh, absolutely. I find that now is a lot more of a conversation of how I get into it as opposed to what the heck is it.
That's right.
So, but I'm dealing mostly typically with more of the nuts and bolts guys.
Okay.
But the nuts and bolts guys won't be able to do anything without management and upper management, CX level management endorsement.
Right.
And vision and direction.
No, you're exactly right. And I found myself that over the last 2 years, I've had far more meetings with CEOs to talk about how technology can transform their business than I've ever had before. And that really shows that, hey, there's a great interest on becoming a digital business and being more agile through the use of the cloud. The other piece that I think is important is that when you're looking at your compliance environment, look at how you're doing your business today. Take a look at the skeletons that might be in the closet.
Yes.
That, hey, you know, you might not have gotten the budget for that security control, or your passwords might be a little bit stale, or you might not have updated as fast as you could have.
I actually saw a great session at Ignite in Australia, the 30 Bad Habits of System Administrators,
okay.
Where it actually deals with business. In business, IT will need to put out the fires.
Right.
And sometimes the activity that you need to take, the action that you need to take to put out that fire will be the cause of the next fire because you don't go back and clean it up.
Right.
So look at your own environments and figure out where the skeletons are. Clean them out before you move on.
Exactly. Because as you move to the cloud, if you look at how you're doing your business today and what it could be by moving to the cloud and you're doing your privacy impact assessments, your threat risk assessments, you will quickly realize that, hey, in many cases, you're actually improving your compliance posture, improving your security, improving your privacy by moving to the cloud services.
Yep.
We saw that banner in the cafeteria this morning.
That's right.
And talks about the end of life for SQL Server 2005.
That's right.
Less than 120 days are left to upgrade and get off that product.
Yep.
But in the cloud, you're always up to date. And that is a great way to keep ahead of security problems.
That's another that addresses another myth. I was going to say that's another myth, but that addresses another myth. in PaaS, so platform as a service, your infrastructure is always updated because we manage it. All you have to manage is the application and the data you put on. In IaaS, we manage the infrastructure, but the VM is yours.
Right.
So everything that's inside that VM should be treated the same as you treat any other machine within your data center.
That's exactly right.
So we're not going to go and patch that VM. We will give you the tools to do it, but we're not going to do it for you. So depending on whether you're on IaaS, PaaS, or SaaS, there are different operational activities that you need to take to stay compliant and to stay up to date.
Exactly. And it's that partnership. So we provide cookbooks and white papers about how that can all be done in an effective way. And also, we provide support for third-party tools as well on top of our infrastructure as a service.
Absolutely.
So that people can build and construct their own security environments and controls and operation procedures.
That's right. So if you want to know of maybe Canadian enterprises that have done the jump, made the jump.
That's right.
And you can find some white papers on Canadian enterprises that have made the jump.
Yeah, we're quite proud of these great Canadian success stories of some large enterprises in Canada that have made the leap to the cloud and have seen benefits in engagement of their employees, being able to have better collaboration, communication, mm-hmm. People talking about using Yammer to share employee innovations. Yeah. We've got another enterprise customer that has moved to their email into the cloud and saved 50% of the costs of individual mailboxes. So that's quite tremendous. And we have a last customer that is using Azure for real-time information sharing. And I think those really cover some great examples of transforming the business yep. from the employee basis, leveraging their costs, and supporting mission-critical applications. And those address, I think, a lot of the questions we're getting from Canadian businesses.
Yes. So this was great. Lots of information, of course, so you can feel free to watch this over and over again if you want, or to go back to the original Microsoft Virtual Academy modules that we had. There was still some very valid information in there. And we'll keep you up to date, so keep checking canitpro.net and the Microsoft Trust Center, the Transparency Hub.
Transparency Hub.
And just thank you for spending that last half hour with us, and we'll see you in the cloud.
Yes, see you in the cloud, Pierre.